The Old Testament scripture is extremely important to us, and our understanding of it may help us to be better workers in the Lord, even though we do not live under it as a law. We're not under the Old Testament law. We're under the New Covenant. And yet, as indicated in 1 Corinthians 10, the Old Testament is an example for us, or includes those things that are examples for us, and they serve as admonition for us, that chapter says. Romans 15:4 says, the things written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. Some of the first things we learn as little boys and girls is some of those stories from the Old Testament. Some of you ladies who have those that are less than a year old are already beginning to tell them some of these stories. And our little ones are beginning to pick up some things, maybe more than we even dare realize, about some of those wonderful stories of the Old Testament. This morning I want us to go back and look at a time in the life of Joseph in Genesis 41. You boys and girls that are in the audience this morning could tell the story of Joseph, couldn't you? You remember that his mother died at the birth of his brother when Joseph evidently was very young. You know how Jacob thought of Joseph as perhaps his favorite son, gave him the coat of many colors. You remember how his brothers sold him into Egypt when Joseph was 17, told his father that he'd been killed by a wild beast. You know the story of how Joseph, when he went into Egypt, began to get involved with the people there to the extent that he was promoted in Potiphar's house, was tempted by Potiphar's wife, ran away from the temptation, but nevertheless was put in prison. You remember the two dreams that he interpreted while he was in prison of the baker and the butler, especially requesting the butler to remember him when he was taken out of prison and restored to his position. You remember how the butler forgot it until Pharaoh had a dream. And then he thought, and they sent for Joseph to come and to talk to Pharaoh about the dream. And picking up in Genesis 41 at verse 25, we're reading more than usual this morning, several verses from this chapter. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good kine, or cows, are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of the famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Joseph interpreted the dreams. He said, Pharaoh, we're going to have 7 years of plenty and followed by 7 years of famine. And this famine is going to be so severe that God has given you two different dreams. They're really one. They say the same thing. But he's given this to you for what we might say emphasis. Now, look at verse 33, which begins with the word now. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities, and that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. Pharaoh, Joseph said, here's what I would suggest that you do. And so he tells him that there is a need to save a fifth part of the products of the grain and so forth that's harvested during these 7 years of plenty and put that into the storehouses to have it ready when the famine comes. In the next few verses, from 37 down through about verse 45, we find Pharaoh listening to Joseph, and not only listening to him, but saying, Joseph, you're the man that needs to do this. You understand, you know what you have said, you know what God has indicated, and therefore who could be better than you to be put in charge? Therefore, I'm going to put you in charge of all this, second only to Pharaoh himself. Picking up again at verse 46, we read, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And in the 7 plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt and laid up the food in the cities. The food of the field which was round about every city laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, so much that they even quit measuring it to see how much they had, for it was without number. Now the next 3 verses tell about the family of Joseph. We're going to skip over that, the family that he obtained in Egypt. Verse 53, the 7 years of plenteous that was in the land of Egypt were ended, and the 7 years of dearth began to come according as Joseph had said. And the dearth was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph. And he saith to, as he saith to you, or what he saith to you, do. And the famine was all over the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all the lands. And again, even you boys and girls can pick up there and go on through the book of Genesis. You remember how Jacob sent his sons down to get corn. You remember how eventually Benjamin was sent. You remember how Joseph revealed himself to the brothers and sent back to get his father. What a wonderful day that must have been for Jacob. When they first told him, it says his heart fainted in chapter 45, but then they convinced him by showing the wagons that he'd sent, and it says that he was revived when he heard about Joseph. You know the story of how the children of Israel went down into Egypt, eventually after hundreds of years, to be brought out by Moses. You know the rest of the story, but today let's concentrate on what we've read. I believe in Genesis 41 we have one of the best outlines for dealing with difficult situations, or for that matter, dealing with any situation, than anywhere that we could go to find a way to do it. In the first few verses that we read, perhaps beginning at verse 25 and going through about verse 32, we find Joseph identifying the situation, identifying the problem, identifying the need. Of course, you and I know as we read this that he had God's help. In fact, we understand that it was God working through Joseph that made it possible for these dreams to be interpreted. But having said that, let's notice that he identified the situation that was before them and explained it to Pharaoh. He said, Pharaoh, we've got 7 years that we're going to have a plenteous harvest. In fact, the indication is that it would be even more than usual, because they were able to take in grain, and it just talks about how much they had, how it brought forth. Verse 47 says, by handfuls. A word that's used to emphasize the greatness of the harvest. He said, Pharaoh, 7 years of this plenty. And then we're going to have a problem. We're going to have 7 years that will follow that, in which there will be a great dearth, a great famine throughout all the land. This is the problem that we are facing. He identified the situation. And then, as described beginning at verse 33 and going through verse 36, Joseph proposed a policy for dealing with the situation that had just been identified. Now notice some things that he did not do, that neither Joseph nor Pharaoh did. Neither one of them said, now God has revealed this, let's just turn it over to him and let him take care of it. Joseph might have said, my God is great enough that he can do anything he wants to, and he'll just take care of this. Pharaoh, there's no need to worry about it. We'll just turn it over to God and let him handle it. He did not say that. In the second place, neither did Joseph nor Pharaoh deny the facts that had just been determined. One of them might have said, well, now, wait a minute, are you sure? You wouldn't expect Joseph to have any doubt, but possibly Pharaoh might. He might say, well, look around. Look at how the crops are. Surely this is not going to happen. Let's just forget this and deny that. It's not going to happen. But that's not what Joseph said or suggested, and that's not what Pharaoh thought of. Neither did either one of them say, well, if there's 7 years of plenty, we've got plenty of time. Let's wait and talk about this a little bit later on. Surely if there are going to be 7 years of plenty, we can go 2 or 3, maybe 4 years without having to deal with it. Let's eat, drink, and be merry. Let's take care of what we want to now. And as it gets a little closer, we'll deal with the situation. No, that's not the approach that was taken. And it's interesting that they did not even invite in a consulting firm to study the situation for 7 years. That might be what would have happened if they'd been in 1995 in the United States. Well, we've got a situation here. It looks like there's a possibility of some problems. Let's appoint a commission or a committee and let's study this and they'll report back. No, they didn't do that. Joseph said, Pharaoh, here is the policy that you need to adopt. Now, we've identified the situation and there's going to be 7 good years followed by 7 bad years. Now, here's the policy that you need to adopt. You need to select somebody to be over this. And I think it's interesting that the suggestion is a man, one man, not a group of men who might not be able to agree on what is necessary. But he said, you get one man to lead this. Now, under that man, you have others that will help him, and you take in a fifth part of everything that is grown for the next 7 years. I don't know that I understand exactly why a fifth part would take care of it, but two factors maybe contribute to that. One is, the evidence, as already said, is that they took in harvest by the handfuls, maybe more than usual. And a second thing is, you would expect Egypt to be a country that would sell part of its grain and it wouldn't need all of it to take care of its family, even in a normal year. And so, somehow or other, maybe by God's help, Joseph determined that a fifth part of what they grew for 7 years would take care of the needs. And he said, Pharaoh, here is the policy that we need to adopt. Let's look ahead. Let's start right now. And let's start laying up the food that we'll need during those 7 years of famine. He identified the situation and he proposed a policy. And then they executed the plan. Pharaoh said, Joseph, you're the man that needs to do this. He gave him the authority that he needed, as indicated in verses 41, 2, 3, and 4. And he said, now, Joseph, you're in charge. And he said to Egypt, you listen to Joseph. And in verse 46 through 49, Joseph began to execute the plan. He began to have all of them to bring into their own cities that fifth part, and they stored it, growing it outside the cities, it says. They brought it into the cities, and they stored it. He executed the plan. And 7 years later, when the famine came, they were ready, not only to take care of the Egyptians, but to take care of others who came calling and asking for help. I suggest to you that there has never been a management book written that gives a better approach than what is given in the Bible in this specific case. To take care of any situation, any problem which arises, any need that needs to be met. He identified the situation, he proposed a policy, and he executed the plan. Now let's come to 1995 in our lives and plug our situations into this pattern. Some of you that are here this morning will be going back to the schoolroom later this week and next week. Some of you will be going across the street to the university. Some of you beginning your studies on the university level. You're looking ahead to what may need to be done 4 years from now, 5 years from now, 6 years from now, as the case may be. To what you're going to need to do at that time, and now you're beginning to get ready for that. What are you doing? You're identifying the problem or the need, and you're proposing a policy with the help of the university or whatever school level you are, and now you need to execute the plan. By executing that plan within the boundary of the right policy that is presented and prepared, you'll be able to be ready for the situation that develops, which means 4, 5, 6 years from now, you're going to need to be on your own and provide your own way in life and maybe support others. And even those of you that are in elementary and high school, 4, 6, 7 years from now, you're going to have other responsibilities. And if at this point you can, in some way and to some degree, identify the situation and prepare a policy and then execute the plan, your life is going to be better. I believe this will work in our families. Sometimes we have problems arise in family relationships, perhaps in every family to some extent. There may be some problems, at least some needs that arise in the husband-wife relationship, the parent-child association. Is there a better approach than Joseph's approach? Identify the situation. If there's a problem, identify it. If there's a need, identify it. And don't just turn around and say, we're going to turn this over to God, or we're going to put it off for 6 years, or we're going to ignore that it's here and maybe it'll go away. But identify the problem and then propose a policy to solve it and then execute the plan. It'll work. In fact, that's basically what counselors, I think, are telling people today. I'm thankful for good counselors, marriage counselors and otherwise. Some may not be so good, but I'm thankful for those that are. And you have a problem and you go to one of them, I'll guarantee you that the first thing they'll do is try to get you to determine what the real problem is. And instead of you asking questions and them giving answers, usually they'll ask questions and get you to answer yourself. What do you want? What do you want to do about it? And what are you going to do about it? Identify the problem, prepare the policy, and execute the plan. It will work within this community. In the last few months, and even long back before that to some extent, but especially in the last few months, there's been a lot said about a problem that we have with too much traffic on Main Street. And if you don't recognize that problem, you evidently live north of Jackson. The community is beginning to look at that more so than it has in the past, identifying the situation. But when the situation is identified and the problem is spelled out and the need exists, what's going to happen? There's going to have to be a policy prepared. And if that policy is prepared and it's left in the legislature at Nashville or it's left in some presentation that's laid on a shelf, what good's it going to do us? What will get the job done? Execute the plan. And in our community activities, that will work. I believe it'll work in the church. Chester is with us this morning, going to Ufa, Russia. Some time ago, we began to identify the situation. Problem is that people in Russia have not heard about Christ. The need is to take the gospel to them. All right, we've done a pretty good job identifying the situation. Number two, we need to prepare a policy. And so work has already begun. We will do this. We'll have those make trips and teach, and then we'll try to send someone to be there and teach, and we'll try to prepare the people there and instruct them and train them to where they can go on and teach the gospel. We've been preparing the policy, and now we're involved in executing the plan. And Chester, as an individual person, has gone through these same steps and is in the process of it. He's identified that there's a situation there with a need and a problem. He has a policy to do something about it, and he's ready to execute the plan. Our elders in the last year have identified the situation that they need to put more time to shepherding the flock. They have prepared an approach, and they're in the process of executing the plan. Deacons have been appointed and assigned responsibilities. What's happened? We've identified the situation. In fact, I remember a Saturday morning where the elders and I met all morning and into the afternoon, looking at all the different areas where we need to be involved and who can be put in this area and how can we match this work with a certain deacon. We were identifying the need and preparing a policy. And with the appointment of new deacons, we were continuing that to prepare everything to be ready to take care of what's going on now and what we believe to be good times, to be ready to meet even difficult times if they come. And the need now basically is execute the plan. Execute the plan. That's the bottom line of it. Suppose Joseph had gone through all of this explanation to Pharaoh about the dreams, and he'd made this suggestion to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh had even said, well, it's a good idea, but they'd done nothing about it. What do you think would have happened 7 years later? All of the identifying of the situation, all of the presentation of policy, it is not worth a thing unless the plan is executed. That's the bottom line of it. There is a need to identify the situation. If we just go out and start doing something without knowing what we're doing, we're not going to accomplish anything. There is a need to sit down and analyze and identify the need or the problem or the situation. And certainly there is a need, and I believe God's book teaches this, to prepare an approach. What's the way God would want this done, or what's the way that common sense would dictate that this be done? But then there has to be the execution of the plan. And that's where the solution is going to come. That's where the solution came in Genesis 41. Why did they have the food 7 years later? Because they executed the plan. They put the grain in storage and they had it when they executed the plan. Identify the situation, prepare the policy, and execute the plan. And folks, I even dare say to you, that's exactly what's involved as we think about the invitation of Jesus Christ. You're in the audience this morning and you're not a Christian. Identify the situation. Face the fact that you're not a Christian. And that somewhere down the line, if you don't do some preparation and take care of it, you're going to be lost. You've identified the problem. Now let's present the policy. We do that through the Word of God. God tells you what to do, to believe, repent, confess, and be baptized for the remission of sins. Perhaps you're here this morning as an unfaithful child of God and you need to be restored. Identify the problem and realize, and by the analysis of it, realize that if you don't do something about it, after some time, somewhere down the line, there's going to be that end result. And so you need to do something about it. And even all of us in the church who need to be more involved and more active, we need to analyze the situation, identify the need, and present the policy, but then we need to execute the plan. If you've identified the situation that you're not a Christian, and you understand the policy that's presented in the Word of God that you need to come and be baptized into Jesus Christ, or you have identified that you yourself are not faithful as a Christian and you need to come back asking for forgiveness and prayers, it is time to execute the plan by doing something about it, as together we stand and sing.